Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
You know, there's always things happening that we don't necessarily hear about, but they're very important. And one of the first things I thought about when the president announced that he had tested positive for COVID-19 was, I wonder how our enemies think about this. Do they see this as a potential opportunity? And it's good to know that our military is always at the ready. Joining us now is become our tradition on Monday. Someone with a vast military history and experience, 30 years in the military, Special Forces, Pentagon service, West Point graduate, and with the Heritage Foundation. Always a pleasure to welcome Steve Bucci to the show. Steve, welcome back.
It's good to be on the show, Pastor. Thanks for having me back again.
So am I exaggerating or am I probably close to right on where something like this announcement from the president, COVID-19, that enemies perk up a little bit when this happens?
Oh, absolutely. They follow our leadership probably more closely than we do. Mm-hmm. Not just their health and well-being, but every word they say, every movement they make, every nuance, they're always trying to read stuff into it to either give them an advantage or, you know, a heads up on something that might be coming. So something as big as the president testing positive, yeah, that got a lot of people's attention around the world. Mm-hmm. A lot of them are friends and a lot of them who are definitely not our friends.
Well, sure. I mean, you saw all the international support coming in from world leaders wishing, a rapid recovery for the president. But, you know, I'm thinking, how does this play in Tehran, right? How does this play in Kabul? You know,
The first thing they probably did was thank their respective, you know, gods and
say,
we hope he dies.
Yeah.
Because he has been so tough on those folks, despite what some people say, probably definitely in China and maybe even in Moscow, because President Trump has, you know, regardless of what anybody wants to say, he's been pretty tough on our enemies.
And
they know that there's a lot of things they're not going to be able to get by him that they might have gotten by somebody in the past or might get by Joe Biden if he wins the election in the future. So, yeah, they're probably mostly pretty happy about this. Mm-hmm. I think they're probably disappointed when he seemed to be doing just fine given the taped interview he did and then going out and waving to the supporters. And then hopefully, I don't know if he's gone back yet. They were scheduled to go back this morning. I've been watching the news. I've been in my office. So hopefully he'll get back to the White House today and get on with business.
Yeah. Well, while all this was going on and the president, announced this, I guess Friday or late Sunday night or late Thursday night, midnight, or early Friday morning is when news came out. While this was happening, Secretary of Defense Mark Esper was over in Northern Africa and doing meetings with three different countries. And I'm imagining this is pretty significant. One was Algeria, the other is Tunisia, and the other was Morocco. And on Friday, we signed with the government of Morocco, we signed a 10-year cooperation agreement, military accord. And I didn't realize, but apparently we look to, particularly Algeria, we look to these guys as tremendous helps for us in the fight against terrorism, particularly in Africa. How significant is this that we would sign a 10-year military agreement with Morocco?
Pretty significant. Morocco, most people don't know, was the first country that recognized the United States of America when we were founded.
They have been an
ally for us. I mean, a lot of different governments have gone through since then, but they've been an ally to us for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So signing this agreement shows that, you know, despite what some people said, President Trump wasn't going to ruin our relationship with everybody in the world, and that they are interested, frankly, you know, it's more in their interest than in ours.
Mm-hmm.
To be friendly with the United States and to have a stable, long-term relationship with us. So great sign. Another example of President Trump's foreign policy working, to the great surprise of all the naysayers who ever done it the way he did it. Well, okay, well, his is working, yours didn't. So kudos to him again. I don't know, maybe he'll get a fourth nomination for
how do you pull this off? He puts the U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem, which has been promised by, what, four or five previous administrations, never done. He gets this peace agreement signed with Israel and United Arab Emirates and Qatar, and there was someone else involved with that. And now we announced this long-term agreement with Algeria. And if you look at the map, I mean, Algeria is very close to places where we've had other problems, like Libya, like the Sudan. Morocco right next door there. So that whole Northern Africa part where there has been, Al-Shabaab and people like that have set up base. I mean, this is a huge area to be able to now know that we've got this extended 10-year period of cooperation with. Forget about the fact that in the Middle East, we've got these Arab countries recognizing, not only recognizing Israel, but signing accords with Israel. I mean, this president has done more on the foreign policy front since probably Richard Nixon. I mean, who has done more with securing our relationship with other countries than President Trump?
Well, in hard facts, and particularly in areas like the ones you mentioned, where everybody has said forever it's impossible, you can't do it, he's been doing it. So it just shows that, okay, the established order of foreign policy, you know, gurus in Washington, frankly, have been wrong about all this stuff.
Yeah.
It tells you that maybe you probably, as you get ready to vote, you probably don't necessarily want to listen to those guys. You make up your own mind based on President Trump's track record and his ability to actually deliver on the promises that he's made.
Mm-hmm.
And he's done phenomenally. And I mean, frankly, even people that like him are surprised when this stuff happens.
I know, right?
Wow,
I mean, I
this
am.
Is another home run. How did this happen? So it's great, and great for America, great for our allies, great for stability in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the man does not get even an iota of the credit that he deserves for running a pretty exceptional foreign policy, process for nearly 4 years now.
I mean, it's hard to imagine that somebody could do that much good and still be criticized. And you talk about, you know, our enemies rejoicing over the news that he's got COVID and hoping he dies. We've got people in the United States posting on social media things like they hope he dies. And some correspondents with major networks, they were forced to take it down. But it's amazing to me how the level of hatred for our commander-in-chief is without boundaries, it seems.
Yeah, it really is, and it's irrational. It's not based on his policies, though certainly there's some folks who vehemently disagree with his policies. In the same way, you know, you and I probably vehemently disagreed with President Obama's policies. The difference is, you know, we sat there and said, well, we don't agree with this. You know, we could comment on it, and we could go to the voting booth and vote and for a change, which we finally got in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't go out and burn down cities. We didn't go out and, you know, declare on public media, this is not my president. Or, you know, this guy, he doesn't represent me. Well, mm-hmm. you know, sorry, you're in the United States of America. If you're a citizen, he represents you. He is your president. The rules don't say you got to love everything the man does or love the way the man does it, but he was duly elected. He is the legitimate president of the United States. And, you know, half the country, at least, is sitting there going, wow, our president has done a crackerjack job.
Yeah.
And you know, he's apparently not done yet. So we'll see what happens here in the run-up to the election, what's going to change. You know, this is 2020, and change seems to come fast and furious.
Wow, wow.
So we'll see where it goes from here. Our prayers are still with the president and the first lady, that they and the others that came out from that outbreak, that they get through this with a minimum of problems and quickly recover and get back to their service of the country. And we'll see what happens going forward.
I mean, I realize we're talking with Steve Bucci from the Heritage Foundation. I realize that the military is not a monolithic group where everybody agrees and all have the same opinion. I mean, it's a very diverse, you know, force, all branches, very diverse, all over the country, very diverse in opinions. I'm sure there's just as many Democrats as Republicans in the armed forces. But it seems like at times like this, the military, certainly law enforcement, has galvanized completely behind the president. But it seems even at times like this, the military seems to rally together behind the commander-in-chief at times like this as well.
It does. And, you know, a lot of folks in the military don't even identify with one party or another. But if you look at the majority of people who, you know, enlist in the military, you know, or sign up as an officer, the majority of them are probably more conservative than they are liberal. You know, some of them may be in that category in the middle, and they may go one way or another, that, or they don't care about a party, but they're relatively conservative. It kind of attracts that sort of person.
Right, right.
You know, to be honest with you, the State Department attracts people who are mostly liberals.
I know.
Not 100%. There are people in the State Department. I'm talking the career track here, not the politicals. But they're mostly liberal. So, I mean, different parts of the government attract different sorts of people. But, yeah, the military, for the most part, you know, we like to see our national leaders be strong, be decisive, be the kind of leader you would expect a military person might rally to. We don't like namby-pamby people. We don't like people who are so solicitous of other countries as to put us down. You know, we're honest about the, you know, our country's not perfect. We got warts, but it's, you know, we in the main believe that the United States has a role to play in the world that's positive, and that we think we're a part of it. So, yeah, the military, particularly at a time like this, when the commander-in-chief has a problem, like getting sick, this is not a time for the military to walk away from it. This is a time where the military will naturally rally around our boss and support him in every way we can.
Well, I mean, it seems like the right thing to do, but now, as you say, 2020 seems to be kind of an upside down year, and bad things happen rapidly. I'm wondering, just to change subject a little bit, I saw an article last week about special forces, and the basic premise was that as technology changes and the world changes, and methods of attack change, and even the way our enemy fights changes, that our special forces units have to adapt to that and change. And they talk more about things like, you know, less rooftop snipers and more, you know, more drone operators, you know, things like that. What is changing in the way special forces carries out its missions these days?
To be honest with you, not too much. I mean, we get new technology. You know, drones are clearly a new part of the technology. We incorporated them in very quickly,
sure.
You know, the handheld ones and that sort of thing. You know, people who say stuff like that don't really understand our history anyway. We have always been a very, very innovative part of the military, very open to thinking out of the box, both in our technological means and our methodology with interaction with other people. So, yeah, we change. You know, after 9/11, everybody got into chasing down terrorists. And, you know, now we've actually returned in large measure to some of our more traditional missions, which is to work together with allies around the world to train them, to build up their professionalism. But in some cases, we still got guys kicking in doors and, you know, getting mm-hmm. bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
So whether we do that with better weapons today than we did yesterday, that's kind of the natural development of a military organization. You know, we're not using flintlock muskets anymore. and you know, we actually, you know, wear boots that fit, not,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
That you could wear one on either foot and it wouldn't matter. It's so, yeah, we get better. We do cyber operations now,
yep.
Clearly do drone operations, incredibly tied to the other services. You know, I mean, it was special forces who were guiding in special operations forces, all of our cousins, who were guiding in bombs being released from,
mm-hmm.
you know, B-52s so
sure,
high
sure.
in the air you couldn't see them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're coming in and hitting a pinpoint target based on an 8-digit grid coordinate. That's pretty slick stuff and pretty high tech. And special ops has always been at the cutting edge of that stuff.
So you guys don't follow technology. You lead in the technology.
We're usually early adopters, at least.
Yeah. Yeah. And last question, Steve. Did special forces start in Vietnam? Is that, or I mean, it was earlier than that. When did the concept of special forces, you know, actually take hold and become a vital part of how we fight battles?
Well, it actually started. You know, we trace our origins all the way back to Rogers Rangers and those guys in the French and Indian War. We've had unconventional units all through our history. The modern special operations forces kind of started in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
We had the Ranger regiments there that, you know, fought at D-Day at Normandy. We had the OSS, the Office of Strategic Services,
mm.
which is the
yeah.
point of genesis that both the CIA and Army Special Forces, the Green Berets,
mm-hmm.
trace their lineage to.
Mm-hmm.
The units were formed in the late 50s, early 60s, and then we got the beret. Our units had been formed and established, but we became the Green Berets when
mm-hmm.
John Kennedy authorized us to wear it. The commander asked him when he came down to Fort Bragg for a visit, he said, "Sir, this is the hat our guys really like to wear. We'd love to have this be our symbol.
Yeah.
What do you think?" Kennedy said, "It's authorized. That's now your headgear." And it's been that way ever since, even
wow.
during some time periods when some folks in the Army said, "Hey, we don't need that thing. Take that away from them. They need to be like everybody else."
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know,
not
to sound, you know, too proud, but we're not like everybody else. And we earned that distinction. Vietnam was really the time when they really came to the fore, really
yeah.
became a key element in our military. And then, obviously, you know, in more recent conflicts, they played a huge role. And then after 9/11, special operations writ large, including the SEALs, you know, our civil affairs guys, the Air Force special operators, all the pantheon of special operations. That's really where we came to the front, and a lot of people realized we are a key part of our military,
mm-hmm.
not the most important.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get in a really big war, those
yeah,
guys
right.
with tanks and bombers and battleships or aircraft carriers and
mm-hmm.
cruisers, they play a bigger role. We
sure.
then go into supporting role, but in this kind of conflict, we're pretty darn essential.
Yeah. Well, I remember back in the day, John Wayne probably made the Green Beret as famous as anybody because they had a movie. I think the movie was called The Green Beret, and
yep.
it was a
it
movie
was.
That John Wayne did. Hey, always a pleasure, Steve. Thank you so much for the history. Thanks for your input on things. We love talking with you. I know our audience does as well. Steve Bucci, Heritage Foundation. We'll talk to you next week, my friend.
Sounds good, Pastor. Have a great week and be safe.
You too. Thank you.